The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week 2019 title sponsor, TechStars. At the core, TechStars is a company founded by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. With more than 300,000 alumni and 10,000 mentors across 150 countries, TechStars is a worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed. To learn more, go to techstars.com. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. This is one of 20 interviews recorded in a pop-up backroom studio at Dojo 4 during the 10th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode 53 is Jack Morrison, co-founder and CEO at Scythe Robotics. They build highly intelligent, autonomous robots to tackle challenges in unstructured outdoor environments. Among a number of topics, Jack and I get into the difference between robotics and artificial intelligence, why we should not be worried about the robots and AI taking over anytime soon, the state of the front-range robotics industry, and why it's going to be a while before we all have Jetson-style robots in our homes and on the soccer fields. All of that and more as the Boulder Tech Podcast speaks with Jack Morrison from Scythe Robotics. For starters, tell us about why you founded Scythe Robotics and what the company does.
Sure. So Scythe's mission is to make it radically easier to take care of all our outdoor spaces here in Boulder. We're blessed to have a lot of really beautiful parks and campuses and sorts of open areas to enjoy. And all of that space takes a lot of manpower and a lot of dollars to care for. So we are looking at building autonomous robots to really ease the burden on cities and corporations and schools and organizations who have space to sort of take care of that space. We're starting that journey with a self-driving commercial lawnmower. So it's a lawnmower designed to do the work on its own to take care of these large open areas.
So robots picking up trash off the trails and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think that's part of the sort of long-term journey that we're on. Starting with mowing, because there's a lot of grass and it gets cut every week.
Right.
As long as it's not snowing, basically. But, you know, looking down the road, there's things like trash removal, snow removal, all sorts of lawn care, leaf removal, really everything that people need to do that's sort of this repetitive, manual, dirty work.
Okay. Outside. How far away am I from coming across a robot picking up trash on the trail?
Probably a few years before they're out hiking with you and picking up the trash. You know, there's a lot of challenges to the outdoor autonomy to getting to that level. But before you see one mowing your favorite park in Boulder, probably in the next year.
Okay. And is this something you've already begun discussing with the city?
Yeah, so the city of Boulder is actually our first pilot partner. Mm-hmm. We're starting to mow Tom Watson Park up in Gun Barrel. The city's been really open. You know, so the city of Boulder, for instance, has 350 acres of turf grass, which is what you call sort of non-native, maintained, domesticated grass areas that they have to mow every week. They've got 20 or 30 guys who go out every week to care for all that space, and they just have a really hard time finding enough people to mow all of that grass. And so Tom Watson, for instance, they used to have three guys who would go and take care of that park every week. So, you know, they'd weed whack, they'd mow, pick up trash, and now they only have one because it's just too hard to find people in Colorado to do landscaping work outside.
Okay. So, I mean, that was a question I wanted to get to was, you know, robots versus humans and what do the humans do that are getting put out of jobs by the robots? But it sounds like in this particular case, there aren't enough humans to do the job in the first place.
Absolutely. So it's really hard to find people who want to do $15 to $20 an hour landscaping work. Our main customer isn't really cities, but the commercial landscapers who do most of these sorts of large outdoor spaces, and they just have a really hard time finding people to hire to do this work. So the H-2B visa program is the seasonal temporary worker visa for non-agricultural jobs. So that includes landscaping, you know, all of the Winter Park or Breckenridge workers who you might see from out of the country are probably on H-2B visas. And there's a cap of 33,000 visas per season. So there's two seasons through the year, the sort of spring and summer and then fall and winter. I think on January 1st of 2019, I want to say there were about 80,000 applications for those 33,000 spots.
Wow.
About 75% of those, if I remember correctly, are for landscaping. And so, you know, these business owners who are trying to hire people, they go to Puerto Rico to try and find people. They scour the country to try and find these workers that can do this mowing and you know, edging and trimming and help them grow their businesses so they can take on new jobs. But at this point, they just can't find them. And so really, when you look at robots coming in, they're not going to displace probably a single person. What they'll let these business owners do is take two crews of three guys a piece. So, you know, they'll send a crew of three to go mow the Seagate campus, say. And with Scythe mowers, they'd be able to instead send two guys, a couple Scythe mowers, and then take those two crews of three, turn into three crews of two, so that they could do an extra job at the same time and actually start bringing in more revenue and increase their usually pretty thin margins on their side.
And those 33,000 visas, is that just for Colorado or that's across the whole country?
Yeah, that's the whole country.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, 33,000 visas for about a 6-month period.
Right.
And there's a lot of intricacies to this, but there used to be what was called the returning worker exemption. And so that would let anyone who came in previously on an H-2B visa renew that automatically. And the federal government actually revoked that waiver last year. And so it effectively cut the H-2B visa quota down from about 67,000 down to that 33,000. And so overnight, basically,
the workforce was cut in half.
A number of businesses had nowhere to go. They were counting on having that 34,000 strong group of landscapers, and they all disappeared overnight.
Right. And I really don't want to get political, but I can't help it. Immigrant workers are not taking people's jobs because people are not, you know, Americans are not filling those jobs.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, the immigration debate is inextricably linked with landscaping. I think somewhere around 50% of the landscaping industry is immigrant labor. It's the sort of labor that Americans have stopped doing by and large, especially young folks. And so the landscaping industry depends on immigrant labor to get this work done. And we don't really see immigration going back up anytime soon. It's, you know, it's fallen off from Mexico and Latin America over the last few years. And really the only solution that most of the landscaping industry sees is automation to a lot of these problems. They're really price constrained in pushing the wages up any further, unfortunately. And so automation is sort of we think, the saving grace to being able to get more done in the landscaping industry.
Okay. And getting back to robotics, first of all, what drew you to robotics?
So I went to a small liberal arts college in Maine, thought I might study religion my first semester. And then one of my RAs actually was the captain of the Bowdoin RoboCup team. So RoboCup is this international autonomous robotic soccer competition. And I just sort of fell into it through my 4 years in undergrad and loved it. Got to make these robots play soccer 4-on-4 against each other, sort of travel all over the world and meet roboticists who were working on super cool problems and knew that was what I wanted to do from there on out. After I graduated from undergrad, worked for a government sort of research agency doing computer vision work, and decided after a couple of years to start a PhD at George Washington in robotics and computer vision for robots.
I just had this, I mean, when you talked about the robot soccer, I was like, oh, there's another example of robots putting immigrants out of work.
RoboCup was awesome. So we started, actually the first year I did it was the last year they were using the Sony Aibo, that little dog. And they had it up to 5-on-5, full field games. We even had passing. We had diving saves with the robots. And then the next year we switched over to, it's called the Aldebaran Now. It's a small, about a 2-foot tall humanoid robot. and they were the first year they'd ever made the robots, and so they'd sort of like wobble around, and then when they fell over, they were so new that sometimes the head would just snap off and roll away. Mm-hmm. So you'd have these like decapitated robots lying on the ground in the middle of the field.
That's quite a scene.
Yeah.
So these are the robots that I've seen videos of that have like the robotic dogs that are probably pretty much terrify everyone who's not in robotics.
Not those ones.
Okay.
Much smaller. So the Sony Aibo actually came out in like 2005, I think, and was a sort of a home robot. It was a toy robot made by Sony and really one of the most advanced sort of home consumer robots of its day. But it was only, you know, a foot square, sort of.
Right.
Would be pretty low on the ground. Soccer with the Spot, I think it's the Boston Dynamics Spot Mini that you're talking about, would be pretty cool.
That would be.
And terrifying. They're very stable. These ones were much smaller and slower.
How quickly is robot tech advancing? Where were things 5 years ago, and where will we be 5 years from now?
Yeah, robotics has changed a lot in the last 5-10 years. Mobile phone tech advancement, so, you know, ARM processors, all the IMUs and camera advancements have really helped make it substantially cheaper and more possible to have really intelligent robots. I think in the next 5 years, we'll start to see a lot of use cases like Scythe, so sort of B2B, business-to-business robots coming online and doing things to solve real pain points around the world. Consumer robots is a really tough market to be in now. There's been a few really high profile shutdowns the last few months. Mayfield, Jibo, Anki was just a couple weeks ago, and they'd raised a few $100 million and out of the blue turned bankrupt, which was really sad to see. But I think companies like Canvas Technologies here in Boulder, who just got bought by Amazon about a month ago, to augment their warehouse offerings are sort of I think the next 5 years of robotics will really be focused around companies like them and Scythe and people who have a very well-defined problem that they're solving and can bring a sort of tailored set of autonomous solutions to help reduce that pain.
Okay. And the companies you mentioned that have gone bankrupt recently, they were in the consumer robotics space.
Yeah.
So that's like, I want a robot around the house to just do whatever for me.
Right. So Mayfield and Jibo were making sort of a fun home robot, sort of like an Alexa on wheels, if you will. You know, a personality, sort of a robot pet almost. Anki was an interesting one. They made, I think it was called Cosmo, and it was a small toy robot, sort of akin to Sphero's offerings, but not focused on the educational market at all, really focused on home toys. And they had just started producing their second robot that was a much smarter, sort of more of a companion robot. It had, you know, machine learning on it to do face detection and understand the people around it. It could sort of respond to your emotions. It was a cool product, but yeah, it was tailored for people at home to have a little pet robot, basically.
And that brings something to mind when you mentioned Alexa on wheels. And a recent tech podcast interview, I asked the guest what they thought was going to be the next big thing. And they said voice is going to be big. Most people, myself not included, have an Alexa or an Echo in their home, or, as you know, it's a rapidly expanding thing. But he said basically they're doing very menial tasks that we could very easily do ourselves. It's still really not that hard for me to just click on my weather app and see what the weather's going to be. I don't have to ask someone. I can also just look out the window. There's this car commercial that's been on, and the person's driving and says, I need it to be a little cooler in here. And I'm just like, I just want
there's a button for that.
Yeah, I want the thing to say, just reach out and push that button. Anyway, it seems like robotics would have maybe a role in this, of taking this home assistant thing to the next level.
You know, I can see the Jetsons sort of future where Right. you've got a personal home robot, but I think there's so many challenges to overcome from a price perspective to the utility you can actually provide, which depends a lot on how smart the robot is, how capable it is at, you know, moving things in your home. A lot of these robots, the home robots, were just starting to sort of be able to navigate around your home, which is, you know, the bare minimum to even be able to follow you, for instance. Mm-hmm. The next big challenge, I think, is going to be, you know, how do you actually pick something up? If you have a robot that's supposed to clean up your kid's room or whatever, then you need to know how to pick up clothing, how to fold it, how to put it away. And that's just a challenge that's probably 10 or 15 years at least down the road.
Because I'm going to have to keep folding my laundry in the meantime.
There's actually a laundry robot company that just folded as well.
Nice one.
I think it was called Laundrobot, and it was basically this refrigerator-sized thing that you put clothing into at the top, and like an hour later, it would have it folded at the bottom. It was pretty much a gimmick. So,
what's the difference between robotics and AI?
You know, I think robotics is really the embodied form of what's known as AI. You know, AI is this sort of very broad buzzword that encompasses everything from a phone app that remembers the last time you did some action and prompts you at that time again the next day, like, you know, enter what you ate today, something like that. That counts as AI. Robotics is really about having a physical impact on the world and doesn't actually have to really incorporate AI as it's known. You know, there's plenty of robots in factories that have nothing that anyone would remotely call AI, but they provide a really meaningful automated service, whether that's painting cars or assembling bearings. They do really cool things with very large, dumb robots.
What do you say to people like me who don't know a lot about robots, who get a little suspicious of, you know, they're going to take over? There was a video that was going around a few months ago. I don't know if you saw it, about drones and AI, basically, and the guy's giving a lecture about it. And then the drones come in and just like kill everybody in the auditorium. And then they just go crazy and they're just like going through the city, just killing people. And, why should we not be worried about that?
Yeah, I'd say on the AI front, go watch a RoboCop match. It'll put your fears to rest. Most robots have neither the dexterity of the Boston Dynamics robots on the ground, nor the intelligence of some of the things imagined in some of the sci-fi that is painted as, you know, modern day. I think worry more about people with dumb tools than smart robots on their own.
Okay, I'll try to change my thinking around that. But I also know that, okay, maybe now the robots are kind of clumsy and dumb, but we're going to get better at making them. And at some point, well, I don't know.
Yeah, the singularity is hotly debated in the AI and robotics and machine learning space. I think we have a long way to go before we have machines that can improve themselves. At this point, it takes an army of grad students to produce one of these interesting results that Google shows at their conferences.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so aside from allaying the paranoid fears of people like me, what are some of the other big challenges facing the growth of the robotics industry?
I think the biggest challenge for growing robotics adoption is going to be finding the use cases that are capable with the technology that we have today and the algorithms and the battery sizes and everything that we can do. So, you know, robots started and have really existed up to now primarily in factories, like I said. So auto assembly lines has been a great area because they don't need a lot of sensing. They are hooked up to wall power, so they can use as large of a motor as they need. But to really push robotics into broader use cases, I think what we really need is applications where what we have today is good enough to solve the pain and to start to scale up robotics companies. That's, I think, what it'll take is basically a Google or an Amazon of robotics to make the technology sort of democratized and out there for other people to learn from. You know, if you look at the web, you didn't really have this whole world of web development frameworks and all that until you had a number of very large, very profitable entities built around sort of what were called at the time niche use cases. So, you know, Amazon sold books, Google did search. No one thought at the time that those would be huge, you know, $1 trillion company sort of assets, but they turned out to be like that, and they sort of spurred innovation across the whole industry. I think what we'll really see is the same thing in robotics, whether that's something like warehouse robots mowing grass or some other smart robotics application that someone's coming up with today. I look forward to somebody sort of cracking that nut and hopefully being the one to help do it.
Are there any companies that you see emerging that could become that Amazon or Google of robotics?
I think we've got a great chance at Scythe. Mowing is something that's done, you know, week in, week out across the whole country between 36 and 52 weeks a year. Some other companies that I think are really interesting, the self-driving car ones, obviously. So Cruise, Argo, Waymo, that's a huge problem. The delivery robots as well, like there's a company called Nuro out of Silicon Valley, and they're basically making autonomous deliveries of your groceries or other sorts of items. And I think that has a big opportunity to do something really cool for the world.
Do you see Scythe Robotics selling robo-mowers available for people like me who just have our own lawn we want to mow?
I think someday there's a possibility there. You know, what makes this sort of commercial landscaping really attractive is that one crew will take a single mower to, you know, five or six properties throughout a day. And so you really get a lot of use out of it. You know, mm-hmm. if I think about my mower at home, it gets used once every 2 weeks. And so there's just a lot less use per dollar there. You know, residential mowing and residential landscapers are definitely a possible customer down the line, but it's a bit of a different market than the commercial side.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. It's probably pretty cost prohibitive to get my own robo mower, but maybe the whole block goes in on it and the thing is just running constantly.
Yeah.
Just up and down the street mowing everyone's lawn, and that sounds annoying also.
Yeah, today.
Would it be a quieter lawnmower?
Very much so. So today you can buy really dumb little robo mowers, and the way they work is you bury this guide wire around your yard, and the guide wire is a, sort of like an invisible dog fence where when the mower comes up towards it, it senses the magnetic field from it and turns around and sort mm-hmm. of, you know, if I will, Roombas across your lawn.
Right.
But even that kind of mower, which doesn't do the sort of quality striping that, you know, you expect from a person doing it, costs between $1,000 and $3,000 and is really only capable of doing, you know, the front yard, and then you have to pick it up and take it to the backyard for it to do that. But I think we'll get to the point where, yeah, one mower can just sort of go down the street and cut one lawn, move on to the next one, and then dock back into its truck and get driven to the next set of homes to take care of.
And so then again, it, for me, it comes back to the human part of this is like, okay, so there's the one guy driving the truck waiting for the robot to come back, or maybe it's even a self-driving truck.
Yeah.
So are there any projections about how many human-powered jobs will be replaced by robots in the next 5, 10, 25, 50 years?
You know, I have no idea. I think really what we'll see is not jobs being replaced by robots. A lot of the lowest hanging fruit for automation is things people are stopping doing anyways in a lot of cases. And so I think we'll see a gradual phasing in of robots to take over certain tasks of jobs, not even entire jobs at all in any way. And as the more dull, dirty, dangerous tasks get taken over by robots, we'll see people moving sort of up the value chain into more interesting, creative work. But it's not going to happen overnight. Robots just don't get smart overnight. And so there'll be this phasing in of automation that will help make workers more productive, and ultimately, you know, more productive workers demand higher wages. And I think that'll be a really good opportunity for the economy.
Sounds good. Looks good on paper.
Hope so. I'm
curious to see how that plays out. The Front Range robotics industry appears to be thriving and expanding. Is it doing that at a faster rate than other robotics hotspots? And to what do you attribute this rapid growth here on the Front Range?
Yeah, I think we've got a great robotics community here. So we've got a monthly meetup called Boulder is for Robots that's been around for 5 or 6 years now. I think we've got about 500 or 600 members in it, and somewhere around a dozen robotics companies in the area. I think Boulder, the tech community, is partly to thank for all the robotics companies just generally. It's a great community. It's really collaborative, draws a lot of people in. It's what's kept me here in large part and why I wanted to start this company here. I think it is growing here faster than other areas. You know, there's a few robotics hotspots around the country, and I like to think Boulder can be listed among them. You know, San Francisco, Pittsburgh, Boston, and then Boulder.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No. That was good.
All right.
Yeah.
Jack Morrison from Scythe Robotics, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Jack Morrison, co-founder and CEO at Scythe Robotics. Learn more at scytherobotics.com. That's S-C-Y-T-H-E. And follow them on Twitter at Scythe Robotics. Episode number 53 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week development track sponsor, Technical Integrity. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Honey, Matter, and Zayo. We're also supported by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio, and to KGNU Community Radio for recording gear and studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, comments, and guest suggestions are welcome. Reach me at joel@dojo4.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.